Speaker, please welcome Alonzo from Mountain
Mountain
Valley.
Hi, my name is Alonzo, and I'm an alcoholic addict. And first and foremost, I want to thank God for allowing me to be here. Second, I want to thank Greg for asking me to come out and share my experience, strength, and hope with anyone that's new to the rooms, or if you be old to the rooms, to let you know that this program does work. And I'm not one to come up here and talk about what it was like, what it was like, what it was like, what it was like. Because I found out talking about what it was like, the only thing that made me want to do was drink and hit the pipe another way. But what I did come and carry was a message of hope. Because I believe for hopeless people, we need hope. And the hope is that you too can recover from alcoholism, drug addiction, or whatever your problem may be. The big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, say that we're sure that our way of living has its advantages for all. You don't necessarily have to be an alcoholic or an addict to be up in these rooms, but it does help a great deal. And I say that based on some truth, my truth. My sobriety birthday is March 14th, 1989. I can't take no credit for that. All the credit goes to God, Brian. The only thing I had was the willingness. And thank you, Brian, for coming in and warming up the meeting, and the ride on your 3 years. And everyone that took chips. Because this is what this whole fellowship is based off of, what we're doing around here. And I say, based on my experience, when I came around the room March 14th, 1989, and I remember being in this sober living house. And I remember in this sober living house, there was a guy in there. He said, "You know what, man? I'm only here because my wife told me that if I didn't do 5 days in this sober living house, that she was going to divorce me, take the kids, and I would never be able to see them again." So what he did, he came into the sober living house. And he was there for a week. And the wife and the kids, they came out, they was in the back, they were bringing picnics and all that. And during that week, he left. And we never saw him no more. And I'm not saying that he got loaded, but the book said the world keeps all other methods have failed. So what happened is that, see, what worked for him doesn't work for me. And I know this young lady, she had came around the program, she had an accident. And she had her kid in the car with her and all that. She went to court. And so they took her kid. And the judge told her, he say, "I need you to do a 6 months program. You do a 6 months program, you can have your kid back." And so what she did, she came around Alcoholics Anonymous. She got a commitment. And she got a sponsor. And she was doing everything that we do in these rooms. And so what happened after that 6 months, she went back to court. They gave her kids back and we didn't see her no more. And I'm not saying that she got loaded, but we're people that all of the methods have failed. Because see, the book talks about party emotions, seldom vices, people's pleading and pleading. And I remember before I got here, and I remember, being at home in my mom's house, because I was homeless. I was in my mom's house and she was cooking, and I was sitting back and and I had a little sobriety that day. I had like about one day. And so we were sitting up and we was talking, and I really meant to stay sober, right? And we was talking, and then so she was cooking and stuff, and I had a check coming, right? But I owed her the whole check anyway. So her and I, we were sitting up and we was talking and we was talking and we was talking. Then all of a sudden I heard that mailman below. And so and I told her, I said, "I'm going down and check the mailbox." And I go down, there was that unemployment check. I got that check and I stuck it in my back pocket. I went back up with all the other bills and stuff. And see, I owed her everything. And she said, "Did you get your check?" And I said, "No, it didn't come." So now I'm sitting up and I'm, Brian, I'm sitting up, I'm restless, irritable, discontent. This check is burning my pocket. And I'm sitting up and I'm shaking and stuff. And all of a sudden my stomach started hurting. And I looked at mom and I said, "Mom, go and get some Kool-Aid. I'll be right back." And she said, "I thought you didn't have no money." I said, "I got 10 cents. And I need to let y'all know. And I'm glad I heard you talk about cocaine because cocaine is part of my story too. Because before I was sitting back and I was like, I'm in this AA meeting and stuff, and I ain't gonna be able to talk about cocaine." And so you set the stage. You know, and I say that because you got to watch it, because some of these AA meetings you go to, you can't talk about cocaine. You know, they put you out. You know, had they did me like that when I first got here, I'd have been back out there. You know, but anyway, so I took off. And I go to this little motel called the Greenleaf Motel. And so, and I go up in there, and I'm smoking. And I didn't buy anything, right? No food or nothing, because I knew she was cooking. And so I was there for about 3 days. And so what happened is that I went back in. And see, we always say, I'm not hurting nobody else. But that's the Bosco bull, because when you go on the run, you're hurting everybody that's in your life. So when I left out of that house, man, it seemed like mom shut down. It seemed like she took everything off the stove and she just stuck it in the refrigerator. And I came in, and so I walked in, filthy, funky, greasy, and sneezy. And I'm on my knees, and I'm eating that cold chicken with peas and rice and stuff. And talking about fault emotions, seven suffices. My mom came in. She was like, Lonzo, get up, son. Look at what you're doing to yourself. Get up. She said, why don't you go get help? Greg, I looked up at mom and I said, I don't need help. You need help. Why don't you go get help and leave me alone? You know, and see, the fault emotions, seven devices, judge pleading over and over again. Mr. Mitchell, you come back in my court one more time, I'm going to send you to prison. And I'm sitting up and I'm telling that judge, Dave, I'm telling that judge, don't worry, Your Honor, I won't be back. But I knew in my heart, I knew deep down inside that I was going to be back. In the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, the big book say that the message that can enter the real alcoholic addict must have depth and weight. It said, must go deep down inside while we live it. Why? So it'll wake you up, shake you up, stand you up, and clean you up. Why? So you can hear the truth, see the truth, and go out there and live in it. Because this is about living out here, not in these rooms here. You know, not in the courtroom, because you know what? Normally when the judge tell you, put your hand on the, put your right hand on the Bible, do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth? You'd be like, yeah. Shortly after I left out of that courtroom, no one got loaded. You know, but as I was saying, and I remember my first meeting I went to, and I had probably like about 6 months. And I remember going to the meetings. I would go in there every day, and I would sit back, and I hear y'all come up to the podium. You be sharing, if you want what I got you, keep coming back, you know. And I'm sitting back and I wanted to get up, but I couldn't, you know. And so this chick came up. She said, hi, my name's Sarah and I'm an alcoholic. And if you want what I got you, keep coming back. And I looked at Sarah. I was like, wow, yeah, I want what she got. And then it was this guy that came up to the podium. And he had on this shirt with holes and stuff in it. And he was standing up and he looked toe up. He said, hi, my name's Joe Blow and I'm an alcoholic. And if you want what I got you, keep coming back. And I was like, and I need to let y'all know, Brian, that guy looked at me. He said, you might not want what I got, but you ask yourself, do you want what you have? You know, and so, and it goes on, and another week goes by. And so I'm sitting back one day, and all of a sudden my hand went up, and the secretary got rid of the carpet. I went to pull it down. He was like, come on. But I had good teachers because I was listening to all you guys. You came up to the podium, and you was great teachers. And so as I was walking up, and I went to the podium, I say, hi, my name is Alonzo, and I'm an alcoholic. And the day was great. I got a Jerry Carroll. And if you want what I got you, keep coming back. And I went back to sit down, Greg, and the experiment went so well. I said, I can't wait to go to meeting tomorrow to tell them something. And so what happened the next day, I went to the podium. I walked out, I said, hi, my name is Alonzo, and I'm an alcoholic. You know, I got a job, and life is great. If you want what I got you, keep coming back. And I kept doing this over and over and over again. See, I didn't know then, the big book Alcoholics Anonymous said you cannot transmit something that you don't have. And so what happened is that I went back to that meeting the next day. I went up to the podium and I say, as I was walking up, it was his brother. He was sitting in the front. And as I was walking up, he was like looking up at me and he said, "I know this brother getting ready to break us off." And I strolled over to the Polish. I said, "Hi, my name is Alonzo and life is great. I got the curl redid again and the job as well. And if you want what I got, you'll keep coming back." But this time, Greg, when I was walking back, I looked at that brother, he dropped his head. And when he dropped his head, it seemed like something deep down inside of me, it just hit, you know, and I felt, you know, so bad. And as I was going back to sit down, and I'm sitting back, and my spirits tore up. But see, I understand now that, you know, that you cannot transmit something you don't have, because I wasn't working no steps, I wasn't working nothing. And so what happened is that I'm sitting back and I said, "You know what, I ain't coming back up in here no more." But I do what all good alcoholics do. I start fixing on sober softball. And I get on this sober softball team and, you know, and so it was like about 12 of us. And the only time we went to the meetings when we won, we didn't win that much. But I look at it like this, you know, God have always did for me what I couldn't do for myself, right? And so, see, you know, and I touch on all this because, see, somebody is sitting out here with sobriety, and they think just because they got sobriety that they got it made. But the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous say that any man that think that sobriety is enough is an unthinking man. I don't want to just have sobriety around here. You can have sobriety and go out of your mind. You know, see, and I need to let you know, meetings alone won't keep you sober either. You can go to 90 meetings in 90 days and still get loaded. So what happened is that I get on this softball team and, you know, we playing softball and, you know, we wasn't winning. And and so what happened is that a ball got hit to me one day and I went to catch this ball and I missed it. And so my teammate, he was just hollering and stuff like that. So, you know, "Dave, you know what's going on now." He's just hollering and everybody's out looking and stuff. I'm a brother. I'm supposed to be good in sports. And so he's just going off, right? You know, and so what's going on now? My pride, my ego, you know, what people think about me and all that. So now I'm really restless, irritable, and discontent. So we finally get three outs in, and I go back to the dugout, and he says something. I grab the baseball bat, and I'm chasing him with the baseball bat. But I'm talking about sobriety. I'm talking about sobriety and untreated alcoholism. You know, and I'm chasing this guy with this baseball bat, and all of a sudden, I hear something go, "Lonzo, Lonzo, hey, hey, what are you doing? You got this brother out here in Orange County chasing this white guy with a baseball bat." And so all of a sudden, I go back to the dugout, and I get to the dugout, and all my teammates, they was like, "Lonzo, man, you need a meeting." I said, "Shut up, y'all need a meeting." But once again, God did for me what I couldn't do for myself. That's what I did. I grabbed my baseball bag, my bats, and everything. I said, "I won't be back next Sunday." Like, they really needed me anyway. So what happened? I go to this meeting on Sunday, and but I'm restless, irritable, discontent, full of resentment. I'm resentful at the softball team, and you know, and I'm sitting back, and all of a sudden, I'm in this meeting. I don't want to be at this meeting, but I want to be at the softball game, but I don't want to be at the softball game. Just restless, irritable, discontent. And so all of a sudden, I'm sitting back, and I asked my buddy. I said, "Who's the speaker?" He said, "That guy over there." And so I'm looking at this guy, Dave, and he had a ponytail. He had a white shirt on and some jeans, you know, and I looked at him. I say, "That's that guy right there." I said, "That's the one when I was out there drinking and smoking dope. And it was like five guys selling dope, right? Selling rocks, right?" And so all of a sudden, this guy had a $3 hit. And the other guys had big, big rocks. And I'm looking at the big rocks. And then this guy, he started pushing his $3 hit over. And so, you know, I'm turning around and then all of a sudden he sucker punched me. I got off the ground and I bought his rock. You know, and you would think that that would be enough to make you never, ever, ever want to smoke no more dope. You know, but I got that $3 rock. I went around the corner. I smoked it. And my head, this thing told me, it said, "You know what? We won't go back to him. We just go around the back." And so what happened, I'm looking at that speaker. I said, that's him. That's him. I'm going to get him after the meeting. But I need to let y'all know, that guy went up to the podium. He said, hi, my name is Vernon, and I am a cocaine addict and an alcoholic. And that brother got to breaking this big book down like I had never, ever, ever heard it. And I knew then that I wasn't going to hit another softball on Sunday. When that brother got finished speaking, I bum rushed him. I said, hey, man, will you take me through the work? And so what happened is that I started going out to South Central every Sunday because I knew I had to have something there. That's that deft and weight that the big book talks about. That's that message that when you hear it and you know that you know that you know that you got to have some of that, you know, it seemed like life took on a whole new meaning that day. So what happened, I started going to that meeting and started going to that workshop out in South Central. And we started going through this big book. And some of the things that, you know, we started going through is that I didn't know that I had a disease of a threefold nature that affects me mentally, spiritually, and bodily. So if I got a disease of a threefold nature that affects me mentally, spiritually, and bodily, I just can't go to meetings and expect to stay sober. That's why I said meetings alone does not keep you sober. And the way that I treat this disease of a threefold nature, I treat it with the circle and the triangle that represents the program. In that circle and that triangle, you have a unity that sits in the upper left-hand corner of that triangle. And in the unity is where I take the physical part of my body. Where do I take the physical part of my body? I take the physical part of my body to the AA meetings, to the AA picnics, to the AA conventions, and so on and so on. Just like what we're doing right now. We're all sitting up in here treating our body. Nobody's passing no pipes. Nobody's passing no alcohol, no joints, none of it. Right about now, we all have a strong desire not to drink. I've had many strong desires, but strong desire has never been enough to keep me sober. So basically what it's showing me is that the only thing I'm doing, I'm just sitting up in a meeting and working a one-third program. Then you have the service part that sits in the upper right-hand corner. There's two parts of service. There's minimum service, there's maximum service. Minimum service, when you come into the meetings and you see the secretary, the treasurer, the chip person, you know, and I remember when I asked this guy to take me through the work and he told me, he said, you need to get a commitment. And I tell everyone out there, you know, if you're new, you need to get a commitment. Why you need to get a commitment? Because you need to feel a part of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you don't feel a part of Alcoholics Anonymous, you probably won't stay around Alcoholics Anonymous. So what happened? He said, I want you to get a commitment. You can get the coffee commitment. You can get the chip commitment. So don't get the treasury commitment. And I didn't know what he meant. I stood around, right? So I started saying the treasury take all the money. And I remember getting that coffee commitment. And I remember showing up a half hour early, making that coffee and stuff. And I would wipe that area down, and I had my coffee, the sugar, the cream, everything setting up. And I remember the first guy that came over, and he poured him a cup of coffee, and he drank it. He went, ah. I went, yeah, I did. Because for once in my life, I was feeling used for, not useless. My experience showed me that I had been feeling useless all my life. When I came around to Alcoholics Anonymous and Cocaine Anonymous, I started feeling useful. Then you have the maximum service. We're talking about the ex-problem. We're talking about the ex-problem drinker, the ex-problem liar, the ex-problem convict, the ex-problem person who's just as hopeless and chronic as all of us. And we call that person a sponsor. When I asked this guy to take me through the work, and what he told me, he said, man, my job is only to take you through the book. My job is not here to loan you money, borrow money from you, tell you how to run your life. And but I see a lot of that, you know, because you do have sponsors like that, you know, have you babysitting, going to the store, washing their cars and all that. Did I throw a rock? Well, we know who got hit.
Oh,
Yeah, but what they told my job is only to take you through these 12 steps, you know. And you know, and so basically, because see, when I got here, my experience showed me that I needed help real bad. I didn't need anybody to pat me on the back and tell me that it's gonna be all right, because it's not gonna be all right. And the reason that it's not gonna be all right, because we deal with alcohol, drugs, books say cunning, baffled, powerful. They say without help, it is too much. You know, for me to pat either one of my sponsees on the back and tell them that it's going to be all right, I need to go down to Orange County Sheriff Department and tell them to lock me up because I just killed my sponsees, you know. Then you have the recovery part to set the base, the bottom of that triangle. And it's just like this building. That's why I take this thing right here, because this is where all my trouble lies, right here, you know. And I say that because I would make a sober decision to go get loaded again. I don't know anyone that made a loaded decision to get loaded. Everyone I know have made a sober decision to go get loaded. And normally that sober decision is based off a lie. It's never based off of the truth, you know. So but I take this thing right here. Where do I take it? I take it through the first 164 pages of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I can't forget about the other 8 pages of doctor's opinions. Because had it not been for the doctor's opinion, I wouldn't even know why I suffer from the things that I suffer from. The peculiar mental twist, how I like to take the lie, twist it into the truth, the allergy. You know, that every time I take a hit, I just can't stop. You know, and it talks about being hopeless. Hopeless means wanting to stop, but cannot. You know, every time I said I wasn't going to do it, I did it. You know, and when I came in here, what I've learned is that I don't have a problem stopping. The problem is staying stopped. You know, so when I started treating this mind through the first 164 pages with the 8 pages of the doctor's opinion, I started getting some truth, you know, and at that bottom, the foundation, just like this church right here, when they built this church, they didn't just set it here. They dug deep down into the earth. They laid iron, they poured cement, because they knew one day that this church would be full of alcoholics and addicts. They knew that if the foundation wasn't strong, an earthquake, it would crumble. Set down the winds, it would blow away. So basically, my foundation and recovery have to be the same way. You know why? Because you know what? The liquor stores and stuff haven't changed because you have been here. The dope man hasn't left because you are in here. If I don't have a foundation, what will happen is that, you know, I'll make a sober decision to go get one. And so basically at the bottom of the base, the foundation, that's what I'm building, is a foundation. And you have that circle that around that that triangle. It's just like riding a bike, unity, service, and recovery. Now I'm bringing all three together. I'm getting free from those sick emotion that generates from my sick spirit. It's time to recover now. You know, because if, you know, prior to getting here, in my own self-centered way, I thought the most important thing was the way that I feel. I wanted people's places and institutions to change. Why? So that I can feel good. And I would go to any length to change people's places and things. But the great thing about the program, what it taught me, is I can go to work and change me, and I don't have to worry about nobody else. You know. Let me illustrate. Before I got here, in relationships, it was all right for me to cheat. She better not cheat. You know, it's always about me. As long as you're giving me Houston, we're okay. But once you stop giving me Houston, we have a problem. You know. So see, getting here, it showed me how selfish, self-centered. And you know, because in the back of the book, Spiritual Experience, it's dealing, you know, with my mind, my personality. Because it talks about my disease manifests itself in many forms. It don't always come by way of alcohol. It don't always come by way of drugs. You know, my disease know just what I'm powerless over. That's why the big books say I'm powerless over people, places, and things. It say money, property, and prestige would divert me from my primary purpose. Well, what is my primary purpose? Man, I just want to be happy, joyous, and free. You know, I just want to be able to live life today. You know, I'm gonna kind of speed it up a little. I like Bill's story, because Bill's story is put in the front of the book. And the reason I was put in the front of the book so I could see the similarity. And it came with a whole lot of questions, Dave. It say, Lonzo, did you drink like Bill? Did you act like Bill? Did you think like Bill? And I said, yeah, I did a whole lot of other stuff Bill didn't do. I smoked crack. In the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, they say we share in a general way what I used to be like, what happened, and what I'm like now. You know, and just to touch on a little of it, my time is, I got that much. Anyway, I'm from Cleveland, Ohio. I moved to California in 85. And I came to California on a vacation. And it's like, my sister took me to Venice Beach, one of the liveliest beaches in California. And I'm sitting back and I'm like, wow, everything I, you know, and then the weather, I'm like, wow, is the weather like this always? She said, yeah. I said, I got to have some of this. So what I did, I went and put an application in at her job. And they hired me on the strength of her. But what happens is that when I went back to Cleveland, I get a phone call from that job. And so they say, well, you know, we looked over your application and stuff, and, you know, when do you want to start work? I said, well, I'm in Cleveland now, and I got to get my job, or notice, and this and that. And, you know, they said, well, when you get back to California, just call us. And so what happened, they threw me a big old party. And I had this one buddy, may he rest in peace now, that we went through high school, it was like brothers. And I was telling him that I'm moving to California. He said, I got a cousin in California. He said, I'll go and help you drive. And I was like, okay. And so so what happened is that they threw us a party and we had it going on that night. That morning, we got up to leave. Everybody was standing out. And I had this Park Avenue that I love. You know, this Park Avenue was my God. You know, it would be below, and I would be out there washing it in Cleveland. When I go to get it, the doors be froze. And so anyway, we put the car on a tow bar. My friends did. And we had a sign in the back window saying, Gone West. And so we're riding and we listen to Anita Baker and Luther Vandross. And I look at my buddy, I said, man, I can't wait to get to California because when they see me again, I want to be a star. Little did I know I was going to become a rock star. So what happened is that we took off. We took off driving and, you know, and seeing like we were driving forever. I ain't seen no sign, nothing about California, you know. And so all of a sudden we started running out of weed and liquor and stuff like that. One thing about Alcoholics and that is, it's like we got radars. We can find whatever we want, no matter what time of night it is, what day. And so I look up and I see this billboard say, do drop in, bar. It say 3 miles off the interstate, but I need to let y'all know it's a big difference than a city mile and a country mile. We got off that interstate and we drove way back in the back of the woods. And so we pulled up in front of this bar, and it was a gang of Harley Davidson sitting out front. And music was playing loud, and partner and I, we walked in, and seeing that we walked in the door, all the music just stopped. I told my buddy, I said, don't worry, I got this. So we strolling over to the bar, and as we was at the bar, and the bartender say, where you boys from? I said, we're from Cleveland, moving to California. And then, so all of a sudden, it was this girl sitting next to me. She looked at me, she said, you know what? You look just like Eddie Murphy. And I need to let y'all know, that did it right there. Because now I got to set the stage. I looked at her, I went, hey, hey. So we sitting at this bar, and you know, and we're drinking that bartender's real food. And so what happened is that, you know, he sold us some weed, he gave us some beer and stuff. And then he told us, he said, you know what, when y'all leave here, go straight to the interstate. They may not be friendly back down a little further, right? But I need to let y'all know, I didn't know what Anonymous Craven was back at the time, but it could have been the KKK could have been back there. And I'd have went back there looking for me some crack, you know? And I can see me now with that sheet on my head. But Where they at? Give me a hit. I'm talking about the phenomenal craving. So if you haven't thought like that or done that, put yet on the end. Yet means that you're eligible to qualify. And so with that, we proceeded back to the interstate. And I passed out and I felt the truck rocking, and my partner had ran off the interstate in the ditch. And once again, God did for me what we couldn't do for ourselves. It was these truckers passing by, and they pulled over and they grabbed change, and they took their car off the tow bar, off the tow hitch, and they pulled us out. And the driver looked at me. He said, "You know what? This interstate is full of troopers." He said, "You guys are blessed." He said, "When you go down further, pull over in the rest area." I said, "We will. We will." And as we was driving, my buddy said, "Do you want me to pull over?" I said, "No, man, keep going." So we get to the next exit. We need a gas. And, you know, and so as we was pulling off, I heard something go, "Woo!" And I see the trooper walking up. I tell Glenn, I said, "I got this, I'm worried." So the trooper walked over to Glenn's side, and he was like, "Driver's license." And my buddy didn't have no driver's license. And I said, "Officer, what did we do?" He said, "Well, you ran through that stop sign." I said, "Officer, this is what happened. I said, see that car back there? We hit brake and the car just pushed us on through." And he looked at me, he said, "I never heard that one before." And then he said, "You doing all the talking. I know you have a driver's license." And I said, "You know, see, this is what happened." We left Cleveland. They threw us a party. And these girls from Akron took my driver's license so they can make their way back over to my place. And he shook his head. He said, "You know what? You guys go out and get some gas. I don't want to see this U-Haul in my county when the sun goes down." And we went on and got gas. And soon we was driving. Finally, we saw a sign that said California. And so as we was driving, my buddy said, "You know what? I got a cousin that lives in, how long do I go to?"
You have
13. 13? Okay, let me speak it up. So my buddy was telling me, he said, "I got a cousin that lives in the valley." And then he said, "We can, you know, let's go there." So I dropped all my stuff off in storage. We go to his cousin's house, and his cousin from Cleveland. He said, "Little homie, y'all come on in." He said, "You know what? And I need to let y'all know." His pad looked like Scarface pad. And I'm looking around, and you know, and so he said, "Yeah." He said, "I've been out here for about 10 years, and you know, he's big time dope dope." And he said, "You know what?" He said, "Y'all can, you know, you can come up like me." And he gave us a starter kit. So he gave us that starter kit. We go to Compton. And so there was this motel called the Greenleaf Motel. And so I tell my buddy, I said, "We're gonna go ahead and sell all of that." And then all of a sudden we meet her. Y'all know where her is, right? Her is the one that come up and say, I can help y'all sell all of this. Give me a hit." So we gave her a hit. She was like, "Oh, this is good. Give me another hit." I said, "No, we need to sell this." And so her and my buddy, they went into the Greenleaf Motel. My buddy come out running, Crips all behind him, jump in the car, we take off. I knew then I would never be able to sell any drugs in California. And so what happened is that, you know, after being out for a long time, I'm broke, so I needed to go to this job, man, I got. So I go to this job, it was in Azusa. I mean, the job was in Downey, but I'm living with my sister, and I got to get out of the house because my brother-in-law was smoking way too much in my dope. And so what happened is that I go in, they give me the job, and so my supervisor managed an apartment complex in Azusa. And so what I told him, I said, "You know what, I'm looking for a place, this and that. I need to let y'all know I paid rent one time. I paid the security deposit and the first month rent. And the whole time I was in there, I never paid rent." And so I went to work one day, him and I got into it, but he was no longer the manager of the apartment complex. We get into it, and he said, "Go home, you fired." I said, "You can't fire me." He said, "Why?" I said, "Because I quit." And then, so we going back and forth. And then I pushed him. Next thing I know, Downey police came. And then so down the police came, I got in my car and I went on home. And so it seems like the next day I called and I'm talking to the plant manager. He said, "Yeah, I heard y'all act a fool last night." I said, "Man, I don't know what's wrong with Jesse. I'm looking for victims to blame stuff on." And then so he say, "This is what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna go around and talk to everybody and call me back in an hour." I called him back in about 15 minutes. He said, "I don't even want you on our premises no more. We're gonna mail you everything that you have." He said, "We're gonna mail you everything that you have." And so I sit back and he had asked everybody, see, I'm the type of addict when I'm getting high. If we working together and you got food in the refrigerator, I'm eating up everybody's food and I'm helping you look for it.
Okay.
And so what happened is that, so it seemed like I got that check the next day in the mail, Greenleaf Motel. I went, bam. Then I came back, Greenleaf Motel again, sold all my stuff that I had put in the U-Haul and brought with me. And then this last time I came back and I saw my lamps and stuff sitting out in the driveway. And I said, "Man, they like my lamp right there." Then this car that I love so much is sitting in the carport, both fenders pointed out this way. I got three donuts on it. The window's all busted out, you know. And then, but I do what I always do, my back is against the wall, babe. I call my sister. And I go, "Lynn," I say, "Lynn, they are really tripping over here." And so she said, "Don't worry, I'm coming to get you." She pulled up and she said, "God, look at your car." And I said, "I'm gonna get it. I'm gonna put it back together." So we go back and then I go into her mattress. We go to church first. We go to this church called New Beginnings. And so as we were sitting up in this church, and you know, I'm blocked now because my head said, if I can get one of these sisters out the choir, I can move out of my sister's house with them. I'm looking for a victim now. And then so what happened is that, you know, I'm sitting up in there and all of a sudden I see the preacher come through there. He got a Jerry Curl, he got a cross. He like the guy was smoking dope the night before, you know. Then the basket came around, and when it got to me, every eye in the church was looking. And I was in church for a whole hour and a half. And after that, I went and got loaded. I'm not saying the church don't work, but the big book said we're people all the methods that fail. So I left her back. I went to my sister's house, went on her mattress, stole all her money. And as I was walking down to the motel to get me some drugs, my head said, "You should have got $200. You could have sold some, put some back." Notice I said I never made a sale of no dope up in California. So what happened is that, you know, I go back. This last time I went back up in there, my sister was standing up there. She said, "You know what? I'm missing money," and I walking through there helping her look for it. Then I made one last dash back under the mattress. I took off, wham. Then I came back again. She was standing up. She said, "I want you out of my house." But I do what I always do. My back is against the wall. I call my other sister, you know. And see, Bill's story, Bill said all enablers have to be gone. And so what happened? I called other sister. She came, picked me up, and she said, "You know," she said, "you're the talk of the town." And you know, and I told her, I said, "You know what? I'm gonna get it together." I really meant it with every fiber in my body. So what happened is that she said, "I want you to take me to work and I want you to take Dustin and Pooh to McDonald's and this and that." She gave me her ATM card. She gave me an ATM card. When she gave me an ATM card, I wasn't thinking about getting loaded, right? But as soon as I took the ATM card up in there, the thought came. I go right back to the motel. I spent $250. Then I went back and got some more. I left my nieces and nephews sitting out in the car. And they was blowing the horn and everybody messing up everybody's high in the motel. They was like, "Why don't you go do something with those kids?" So I go back out, I disconnect the horn. I said, "Now stop it." And then I go back in and they come knocking on the door. "Is my Uncle Alonzo up in there?" So what I did, I took off. I took them home and I left. And off again, I was gone. And then so what happened is that one day I looked out the window and I saw the car taking off. So this time I go back to my sister's house, but this time I couldn't do what I always do. When I walked up in there, both of those sisters were standing up there. They said, "We want you out of our house, out of our life. Don't tell nobody that you're my brother." And as I was walking out, my little niece said, "Mommy, what are y'all doing out the long ago like that?" They said, "Shut up, Pooh." And then so I was walking out. She said, "Uncle Alonzo, I got some money." Then I stopped. She had $3. Then I looked down, I looked up, and I said, "Uncle, I'm gonna pay you back. I need to let y'all know. I took those $3. I took those $3 and I paid 3 years of spiritual price I became homeless in the disease, panhandling. One morning, I walked in this bathroom to go in there like I normally do, throw water on my face, take that toilet paper, run across my teeth. And it was then I saw my whole life flashed in front of me. It was then I threw up both my arms. I said, God, please help me. Father, I stretched my hand to thee for no other help I know. Then I leave out of that bathroom in comfort and stuff. There was a telephone booth. And so what happened, I looked up in there and I called. They had a program called Shit, 5 days, 2 day follow-up. I called. They said, do you have insurance? I said, nope. She said, click. I called another place. And then they say, do you have a job? I said, nope. They said, click. Then I called this other place in Tustin. And I was talking to this lady and I said, miss, I don't have a job. I don't have insurance. The only thing I have is a bad habit and I didn't have. And she said, it was free to talk to one of the counselors. I talked to this guy on the phone. He told me about Charlotte Street. And so what happened is that, so he told me, he said, is that a phone number where you are? And you know, I always look at God doing for me what I can't do for myself, because on this phone booth, they had a telephone number and everything. So he called me back. He said, they got a bed for you. And I took off walking. And as I was walking, it was this guy sitting at the light. And I walked up to him and I said, mister, can I get a couple of bucks so I can get me something to eat? He gave me $5. I walked in the liquor store. I walked right past the liquor. I got a bag of chips and a soda. And I went to eat those chips. My whole mouth was so raw from not eating. Then I took off walking. I got to Charlie Street. They gave away all the beds and stuff. Then when I got there, I told the guy, I said, I've been coming. He said, that's all right. He put me on the couch by the fish aquarium. And I went through the old Charlie Street. And so when I was laying in there, I woke up one morning, like about 3 in the morning, and I could swear those fish was talking to me. Somebody said, what they say? I say, they said today, they say this is the last house on the block. And so what happened, just to speed it up. So what happened is that, going into that third step, you know, because in the third step said, we beg of you to be thorough from the very start. Why? Because we deal with alcohol and drugs, cunning, bath, and power. You know, so when I went through that third step and I was able to, I thought I only had one, two, three amends. When I looked at it, I had over 500. And so what happened is that, you know, and I'm looking at all that. And then when I went through the sex inventory, see, one thing I say, there's no such thing as a no good woman, because wherever there's a no good woman, there's a no good man. You know, and I say that based on the strength that, you know, is that these women, they've had it real rough. You know, their father's been up in them, their teacher's been up in them, and we're constantly going up in them. You know, but I also say this to the women's too. You know, you can't sit around and say, I don't like him because he remind me of him. You know, because the thing is that in this 12-step program, this 12-step program is about change. So what happened is that I went back and I was able to make that amends to those sisters of mine. I went back to the first sister, Lynn, and I said, Lynn, you know, I'm in this 12-step program. Been in this 12-step program. I saw a whole lot of harm that I did to you, and the harm that I did to you, I stole your money. I know that's for your kids and stuff like that. You know, and she looked at me and I say, and being in this program, I need to know, you know, what I need to do to make wrong right. And then she sat back and she said, you know what? She said, you know, I just thank God that I got my brother back. You know, she said, because we know that that wasn't you. And then she had told me, she said, and I said, you know, I know I owe you some money. She said, you know what? Just keep doing what you're doing. Then I go to the other sister. I said, Meg, you know, I'm in this 12-step program. Being in this 12-step program, I said, the harm that I did to you, you know, you could have lost your kids to CPS. You know, I took them to the dope house and back and forth. I stole your money and stuff. And then she said, I say, and I need to know what I need to do to make wrong right. And she looked at me, she said, you know what? We just, you're the talk of the town. We love you. We always have loved you. And, you know, and so, and I told her, I said, I know I owe you some money. She said, yeah, and I want my money. And then that little niece, the one that I took those feet off for, my sister lived right around the corner. And that little niece that I took those $3 from, she's a model now. And I remember one day she had called me. She said, Uncle Alonzo, she said, I need a car to go back and forth to my modeling classes. And today I have all kinds of cars and stuff. And so what happened is that I said, come on down. So my sister brought her down. I gave her the little car. And so she looked at, she said, my Uncle Alonzo is the bomb. And as she was pulling out the driveway, you know what? And I looked at her and see, only you people in this room know that feeling. And I looked at her and I just started tearing up, you know. And, you know, I started tearing up because, you know what, once again, God is dead for me what I couldn't do for myself. God had given me my life back, you know. And so, you know, today, man, you know, I what my life is like today, man. I do a whole lot of work in the program. You know, I own my own treatment center today, the New Beginners Fellowship Center. And I started a Llano Club in Fountain Valley, the Fountain Valley Llano Club. We've been around since 1992. We have a gang of meetings there, you know. And so I got a yacht down in the marina, and I got a lot of exotic cars, but I'm not bragging to me. All the credit goes to God. What my God does, he take the worst of us, and he bring the good out of us. He set us in front of others. He goes, see, this is my work. I do the same thing for you. You know, I'm going to say a little joke, and then I'm going to get on out of here. You know, so, you know, one of our little friend, Bernie, one of our little friend, Bernie, that's in the program, right? So him and his wife, they went into the bank, and as they was going into the bank, what happened is that they was in the bank, and then all of a sudden, these robbers came in. They was like, everybody on the floor, face down. So they walked up to the teller. They said, put it in the bag. She put all the money in, then they was walking out. Then one of the guys jumped up, and he grabbed the mask off, and he shot her. Bam! And the teller went, whoo! And she walked back over, he shot her too. Bam! Then he turned around, he said, anybody else see me? And our little friend Bernie, he laying out with his hand up like this, and they walked over, they said, what? He said, I'm pretty sure my wife got a good look at you. You know, I'm gonna say this, I'm really getting down. Okay. I normally say I got, you know, it is the most wonderful blessing to be relieved of the terrible curse with which I was affected. My health is good, and I have regained my self-respect and the respect of my colleague. My home life is ideal, and my business is as good as it can be expected in these uncertain times. I spent a great deal of my time passing on what I've learned to others who want it and need it badly. I do it for four reasons. One, because it's a sense of duty. Two, because it's a pleasure. Three, because in doing so, I am paying my debt to the man who took the time out to pass it on to me. Four, because every time I do it, I take out a little bit more insurance against the cost of slip. You know, one of the things I forgot to mention is that, you know, in these 36 years, you know, they've been hard. Well, they got hard when I was 34 years sober. I lost my wife in this program to COVID. And that was one of the hardest things that I ever had to go through. Losing a spouse. And I'm saying this because somebody's sitting out there right now, they have lost some loved ones and they went in and got loaded. Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous said, we don't get loaded no matter what. A year and a half ago, I lost my mom. Last year, I lost my brother. You know, and I didn't get loaded. But what I realized today is that, man, God is fixing us to be a maximum service for all the ones that took that time out when we was out there running on stupidity. You know, when my mom on her dying bed, she said, you know what, Lonzo, I want you to take care of your siblings because they ain't got no sense. You know, and I was able to take her out to give her what she want. I took her body out into the ocean and spread the ashes and stuff. You know, I was there for my wife. I was able to set her service up. I couldn't have done this if I was smoking, you know, but so I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and Cocaine Anonymous. I lost a boss. I gained God as my backer. I lost a desire. I found a solution. I lost an office with a view, that dumpster I was staying in. I found a perspective. I lost a title, a crackhead. I found my own label. I gave up a position and I found my future. God could and would if he was sought. My name is Alonzo. Thank y'all for letting me share.